Hello and welcome to Sapchat. I'm your host, Jaron Main. Well, welcome along to this latest episode as we slip into autumn of 2023. And it got me thinking, actually, when we were talking about episodes and what to cover, that one of the things that had been keeping me awake at night was, well, how do you get a clean core? How do you get an SAP clean core? And how do you use BTP and RISE with that? What is a clean core? Let's face it. So I've invited two guests, and I'm delighted that they've both freed up their valuable time to join me, both from SAP. First is Vivian Bosch. Vivian is the Senior Director, the Centre of Excellence, EMEA North, where she's coordinating the regional demand generation, which is orchestrating business topic priorities in the form of keynotes, panels, public webinars, etc. She's also an expert in the extensibility of the core and innovation topics on the BTP platform. Vivian's professional motto is dare to discover, break boundaries and redefine the future and inspire transformation. Vivian is famously known for revolutionising SAP's marketing through short TikTok-style videos about SAP BTP. If you haven't seen them, check them out. And today she's acting as a corporate influencer who simplifies BTP, provides coaching for presentation training, career development, brand building, and she strengthens women in technology communities. I'm also joined by Gerd Danner. Gerd is the SAP RISE with BTP lead in EMEA North. He's passionate about helping his business customers understand how the BTP platform creates incremental business value when added to a digital transformation journey with S/4HANA at its core. His main focus is on helping to turn a company's data liabilities into data assets and then enable business transformations and fuel data-driven business innovation. More than 20 years experience in SAP in data management. He's an expert in BI and analytics. Okay, so welcome to the podcast, Vivian and Gerd. Thank you very much for freeing your time up. I said in the introduction, I gave a kind of introduction to your careers, what you're doing at the moment. But Vivian, if I can ask you first, how did you end up at SAP? What was your career route?
Ooh, well, that is always a good question to understand what are the career routes from people. Well, I never thought I would work for SAP, and I'll tell you why, because I thought SAP is this real dinosaur that is very boring and does something with ERP software, which at that point when I was in university, I still didn't really understand what that was. But then there was, I was part of, my master's was in innovation management, and a lot of my colleagues now work either as an entrepreneur or as an somebody who is an innovation future thinker. Mm. But I kind of went into technology. So you wonder now, how did this came about? So as part of our university program, SAP in Denmark was providing some kind of next gen program. So they brought students together. They brought particular partners together, and they hosted that in their SAP office. And that was, to be fair, very impressive because we were at the experience center up there that talked about a rainforest and how they helped to save the rainforest. And I was like, look, this is not at all what I imagined. SAP is actually quite cool. So I really enjoyed that next gen program being part of it. And I walked up then afterwards to the two program leads there and said, hey, I think you're pretty cool. I want to work for you. And they were like, Vivian, you know what? We actually also spotted you. So let's have a conversation. And that is basically how I started to work in SAP and had now various different roles. Started off in Denmark, have been in America, and now living in the UK. So a German, never have been working for a German company, never worked for the SAP German branch or even lived in Germany working for SAP.
Well, I think that's going to be one of the most unusual routes into SAP and one of the most unusual stories in terms of a German not actually working for SAP in Germany yet. But that's and Gerd, you've done 25 years at SAP. So what was the backstory to you getting into SAP?
Yeah, that backstory might not be as exciting as Vivian's story.
Oh, go on. I'm sure it is.
Basically, in 98, when I started to work for SAP, SAP in Germany was hiring like thousands of people a year, right? So
yeah,
you could simply say I wasn't quick enough to escape, maybe.
Oh, bless. No, I'm sure that's not. I'm sure that's was, not the case.
It was slightly different, right? At the time when I signed for SAP, I was actually starting to look into data warehousing.
Right.
I wanted to work in development in data warehousing, and SAP gave me the opportunity to do so. The BW was a brand new product back then, I believe, release 1.2b. So very, very early, and I started to work on the business content development, extractor development on the BW. That's when I joined SAP. And ever since, I did many different roles, could evolve from my initial role in development into something more customer focused, which I quite enjoy. That's why I'm still here after 25 years.
Well, look, I'm always really interested in people's backstories because, you know, how many people come into SAP is always very enlightening. Now, before we start, I've got a confession to make and an apology because I know that I'm asking two very experienced, highly intelligent people to explain some very complex things without the aid of any sort of visual slides. And I know for myself personally, that's like having my arms chopped off. So thank you for agreeing to do this in an audio only format.
We love the challenge, Gern.
I know. Well, I think it was Einstein, wasn't it? Said if you can't explain it to a 6-year-old, then, you know, I'd like to think we're just trying that, but I appreciate this is really, really difficult. And what I will do is at the end of this, I will put the links that you provide in the show notes. So anyone that actually does need to comprehend this and see this in a visual sense, they'll have access to that. And my second confession, which is probably even greater, is that this is all about kind of getting a clean core with Ryzen and BTP. But my confession is that I'm probably responsible for a large proportion of the custom coded Zen transactions that are actually out there in the SAP universe because, you know, like GERD, in the mid-90s and early 2000s, I know in my engagements I was going to clients and we were doing the art of possible. Whatever you wanted, we could ABAP it, and that wasn't a problem. And now I'm going to see those same customers and say, no, what you need is a clean core. So again, I think that's an apology on my behalf. So it's slightly hypocritical to be here talking about that. But if we can start with that, I mean, we've been talking about the intelligent enterprise now for some time. But how does Ryze and BTP play into that strategy?
Maybe I give it a go. As this is probably my main purpose in life for SAP to talk about that right now. if you look at how we're going to market with Ryze and with BTP along the vision of the intelligent enterprise, from my perspective, the biggest noticeable difference over the last couple of years is that we increasingly co-position Ryze together with BTP. Mm. We're basically saying if you want to innovate your enterprise, you need to look at modernizing your business capabilities on one hand side, but you need to complement that with a strong platform at the same time. And there's good reason for that, right? If you're transforming, innovating your business from a business capability perspective, you probably need functions in your ERP that are only available on the latest release, right? If you want to create a new customer journey or you want to innovate your supply chain, you require the renewed business capabilities that you find in IBP, the integrated business planning, or that you find in S4. Mm. At the same time, enterprise software is always only going that far, right? There are people saying it only provides like 80%, 90% of the scope that you want to do. So where does the remaining 10, 20% comes from? And that is where the platform comes in, right? And if you combine the two, you can really, truly transform your business based on that integrated and strong portfolio of business and technology capabilities.
So you're really trying to get the foundations right so that you've got a solid foundation, but an agile platform that is constantly updating, evolving to meet the challenges of an intelligent enterprise moving forward.
Yeah,
that's honestly like that's a great summary. So as we see it, right, like Ryze, the package itself, this can provide you the foundation that you need to become an intelligent enterprise. But there are some scopes, right? Because we have generally this kind of standard software, right? But you as a company, you have some kind of specific requirements, right? There where your uniqueness lies.
Yes.
And in order to express that uniqueness, you sometimes need to build some form out in form of, can be, you know, an application, it can be some kind of other user interface on top of things, these kind of things, in order to make you unique, that is expressed through extensibility. Mm-hmm. And that is the part which you need to build, and ideally not in the core, right, but outside the core. And I guess that's, again, maybe where we're already transferring a bit into our clean core discussion.
Yeah.
Because this uniqueness, basically extensibility, is about creating uniqueness, where you're creating innovations and being, you know, facilitating these information and innovations and being able to simplify upgrades.
So I think that's a really important point, because that's a challenge by every customer that says, you know, you can't be standard S4 out of the box, to coin a term, because, you know, every company is different and everyone has a USB, and that is the value that that business brings to the marketplace. That is its competitive difference. So what you're saying, Vivian, is that actually we're taking that uniqueness, those things that, to go back to my old days, we used to ABAP and create custom code for, but within the core, we're taking that outside of the core now and putting that into the BTP platform, so we can keep a clean S4 environment and move that out. Is that right?
Yes, correct. So obviously the whole concept of now clean core is, in the SAP world, is about maintaining the standard software, the core, without any kind of custom modifications directly in there, while moving those custom extensions out to, for example, the SAP BTP. And we will get a bit more into how can you build those custom extensions. So again, to aim for simplifying upgrades and facilitating innovation. And I think what's interesting there is that back then, right, there was just one way. You can just go down this alley, you do custom extensions in the core. This is how you have been doing it days back. But now we have built many more roads out. You can take now a lot of different roads in order to come to the point of where you want to go to. And we want to talk more now about what are these different roads, right, to explain and maybe get a bit more clarity in. But Garen, I was thinking, right, because again, we talked about that this is challenging to explain these kind of concepts without any visuals. But I was like, wait a minute, we can use analogies to create these visuals.
Okay.
So I already talked about these roads, right?
Yeah.
So this is a bit where I want to go to a highway road analogy.
Okay.
So I will try this now for the first time. So tell me if it works out or not. But think of the core as the main highway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
And to keep traffic flowing smoothly, you don't want to put any obstructions or detours directly on the highway.
Yep.
Instead, the exits, which are our extensions, are used to divert the traffic to other areas, custom solutions, without affecting the main flow.
So that makes perfect sense. So basically, you know, we have our main highway, our motorway, and then we have a number of intersections where we can flow data off that highway to go and do other important things, but keep the highway moving, keep the motorway flowing freely. And that allows you then, of course, to continually update, patch, etc., without any of the pain that a lot of customers are currently facing, in terms of every time they try to do that, they need to go through all the custom code line by line, it's expensive, and that sort of thing. So is that primarily a driver because of the nature now of the way in which we've had this explosion of digital technologies, and the fact that that's kind of necessitated that kind of approach?
I mean, the main necessity for like a clean core is, from my perspective, that due to the way we did extensions in the past, our customers can no longer innovate. A lot of customers actually are buried in modifications, and each time they want to innovate and do an upgrade or modernization to their ERP, they all of a sudden realize, oh gosh, these customizations that I've built are actually my biggest headache now and become an ROI killer in that upgrade and modernization. Why? Because, well, you have to adapt that custom code to the new system. You have to test that custom code and so on and so forth. And if you have thousands of lines of custom code, and if you're like with SAP 20 years, you probably do, then this becomes a significant effort. And that's probably the single reason why a lot of our customers are not on the latest release always, but why they are like 2 years, 3 years, 5 years back, right? And clean core is, from my perspective, the only way out. Clean core, basically moving those customizations into a side-by-side extensibility model. I like that analogy, Vivian, that you just brought up with that highway, right? Remove the obstacles from the highway so that the traffic smoothly flows, right? Do the extensions and modifications with SAP Business Technology Platform is key to get back to that, say, speed of innovation that your business demands, right? Being able to upgrade and modernize your ERP quarterly if you're moving to public cloud, right? That is basically what the promise is of a clean core.
And I think that is honestly also the main reason why we're seeing this shift, right? Because how often did you, when you were looking back at the days, literally update your system? You installed it, you had it there, and then you basically were running on that particular version. But now we're saying, with the speed of technology, with the speed of innovation, you always need to think back, okay, we have been changing now the way of how we're operating. Things are happening so much faster and you want to react faster to it.
Yeah.
So you can't just work with software that is back from there. And I always try to explain that, because some of my friends are saying, oh, Vivian, SAP has these really scary interfaces. And I'm like, well, think back, you know, when, I don't know, about your first phone, right? When was that? What kind of interface and those kind of things had it? Well, this technology that you're currently maybe using at work is still from these days. If you would now buy kind of software and would install that from today with constant upgrades and changes of your as you're used to from, let's say, your phone, for example, now, then you obviously would notice the change. And this is exactly where we're also trying to move companies. But as you know, sometimes, right, even switching from one phone provider to another phone provider, you already know what kind of headache that is.
Yeah.
So just, you know, changing from your backbone of your business and upgrading that and replacing it with some kind of new part, this is also a heavy surgery, right, on your body itself. So imagine what that means for a company operating across multiple plans, multiple countries, and so on. So that's obviously why there is this difficulty and why there are now several approaches of how you can achieve this transformation and making it easier for you to upgrade using the clean core strategy.
And we'll talk about that in just a sec, because I want to explore that in more detail. And I think you make a really valid point, because, you know, any of us are using maybe an Apple iOS device, and you look back maybe two or three iterations of iOS and you suddenly realize how functionally rich it is today compared to just, you know, maybe 3-4 years ago, and how you ever coped on that. And you make a really good point, because, you know, if you are using functionality from you know, maybe 20 years ago, then you are putting yourself behind. The other thing I like to think of is my garage. And it's saying really, but in the spirit of analogies here for our listeners, you know, once your garage, and my experience is, once it gets cluttered, the desire to go and clean it up diminishes, because it's just a big task. But once you get a clean garage, the desire to keep on top of it arises. And I think it's similar there. You know, a lot of clients are looking at thinking, oh, clean core, you know, it's going to take a lot of effort of an upgrade or whatever. I'm not going to do that. And to your point, I think to the motorway point, we're trying to take that blockage away and make sure that you can easily do that and those blockers are not there. So if the listeners apologize, we've got motorways, we've got highways, we've got garages, we've got foundations of houses. Well, we're doing quite well. So let's...
But imagine, Garen, you know, to your garage example, if you could have a scan of your garage telling you what things are really good to keep, what things you probably should throw out because you will never use them or you haven't touched them in a long time, and what things you maybe want to tweak a bit, maybe put them in a different box or somewhere else. That is also what we can do in the clean core.
I think, Vivian, that's based on a conversation last weekend. That's my wife. But, but you make a really good point. So let's talk about that then. Let's talk, because you talked about extensibility earlier on, and we talked about the tools. So what are the tools that our clients can use to understand how they can get a clean core with BTP?
So from a clean core perspective, the starting point really is like with any major transformation, you should get like a kind of strategy around clean core, right? Yeah. Kind of strategy, how you want to move from your existing mess that you have to that clean core that takes you into the future. And for that, I typically talk about the 3R strategy to begin with, right? You need to define your 3R strategy. 3R means retire, refactor, and rebuild. And let's start with retire. That's easy, right? You want to figure out what is the custom code that you actually no longer need. There are reasons for that. In some cases, you don't need custom code anymore because nobody is using it, right? In other cases, you can retire custom code because there's now standard functionality available for it. Now, the second area that I mentioned, refactor, basically means you take existing custom code that is built inside your ERP, and you move that onto a BTP, a business technology platform, side-by-side extensibility model. And for that, you need to refactor your existing custom code to a new programming model. You need to walk away from like the really bad things like directly accessing ABAP tables or calling function modules that you shouldn't call and so on and so forth. So you basically refactor and make your code future ready. And the third area that I mentioned is rebuild. And rebuild is where you actually, quote unquote, throw away what you have built in the past and you start fresh. Why would you do that? Maybe in some cases you have like extensions, innovations, where you have a huge backlog of new requirements that you still need to build into that, right? Do you want to do that really with a programming model and with an approach that has been invented 20 years ago? Maybe not. Sometimes you have requirements where you increasingly need to call services that don't come from the ERP itself, but services like AI machine learning coming from BTP or services coming from an Ariba or SuccessFactors application, right? So in those areas, right, it actually makes sense to rebuild. So these three areas, retire, refactor, rebuild, that needs to be fleshed out. And the starting point for that, there are a couple of tools that SAP provides, like the ABAP test cockpit, which basically checks if your code ready for S4 and so on and so forth. But from my perspective, really the best way of starting your journey is to use SAP's Intelligent Custom Code Management Service. This Intelligent Custom Code Management Service is actually doing exactly this 3R strategy for you. Right. It's basically coming along with best practice tools to analyze your existing custom code and to build those clusters of retire, refactor, and rebuild. Right. And that is what can only strongly recommend customers to look into. It's a service provided by SAP Consulting and gives you like a very good starting point for that journey to become or to get to a clean core.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point, right? So a couple of things. I mean, in my experience, the issue about custom code and actually analyzing how much is relevant, how much has been superseded by, you know, standard functionality, how much is used, it's been quite shocking. I've seen customers with 70-80% of the custom code that's redundant. And that's a huge number if you think about that overhead burden. And then I think to your next point in terms of where that's going, that overall approach and moving it out is absolutely key to driving the value. But more importantly, the fact is that there are tools from SAP that actually help you do this. It's not as if you've got to kind of suddenly, going back to my garage analogy, open the door and think, where do I start? You actually have those tools that help you to make those judgments and to do that. On that point, those tools, I mean, they're automated, but can you explain a bit more about how that process goes, the identification and then the removal of that, or how does that work?
The tools we're using, basically, it's like using usage statistics, how often a certain report is being called. Obviously, we also know what kind of innovations we have in SAP S4. So we have processes that help you understand and map existing custom code to innovations that you have in S4. Yes, ABAP Test Cockpit is also an important tool as part of that change. With ABAP Test Cockpit, we are basically looking at like S4 readiness of your code, right? Are you making, are you using like statements in your code that you should no longer use, and so on, right, and so forth? So it's really a combination of many, many different tools that you would typically apply, right? Yeah. And that is, again, where it helps, right, talking to the experts, right, that have done it before and use like those predefined services that would offer those tools in a packaged approach.
Yeah, and I think to add to this, in terms of understanding what kind of data that could be, like understanding the data that you're currently having, we recommend all our customers to collect 1 year of usage data.
Yeah.
So that then can be looked at and understood, because just if I turn it on today and I say, okay, which data have I not used or have I used? Obviously, it's difficult to tell for the system.
Yeah.
So that's why, ideally, if you're already thinking about that, right, do you already start today, then look at how can you do this kind of clean core analysis, and how do you start tracking your usage data, which you then can also feed in and use in this kind of analysis to understand your custom code better.
Yeah, it's a really good
and
point.
It's all around scoping, analyzing, migrating, and kind of adapting, right? So this is what happens in this analysis.
So I started the podcast with discussing sort of intelligent enterprise, which has been a big focus by SAP and a lot of customers for a long time, you know, and it's gained momentum. But actually, more recently, I've seen a lot of particularly manufacturers, and actually not just manufacturers, all industries actually talking about explosion of devices and sensors, IoT, etc. And I'm really keen to understand, you know, from your perspective, how BTP is actually helping in that, because there's a huge amount of data out there that these devices and sensors do capture. Some of them, which is relevant, some of it isn't. Some of it's relevant for a very short period, and then it's not relevant at all. So how is BTP helping those customers make sense of that?
Well, as you already said, right, it's an explosion of data in its essence, right? So you're trying to understand this data, and ideally you want to do this in a centralized and more governed way, so that you understand the data, you incorporate the data, but you don't just want to do it all in a way that works for that you can understand the data from various different sources, but don't take them out of the context of where they're coming from. And that's where one of our newest releases, the SAP Datasphere, for example, is really helpful to not take the data out of its context, understand where the data is coming from, but then also bundle it, reuse it, and provide self-service access to various different people. So that's one area, right? Kind of trying to understand the data. The second part is around the real-time analytics, right? That's also one part where the BTP can help. So supporting the data process and understanding what kind of continuous streams you're having across your business. Then, of course, these parts need to be secured and compliant and governed, right? So that's also where we can support with the BTP in terms of the security and compliance. And lastly, when you have these different sensors, you ideally don't want to have them siloed. They should be integrated into your business. So that's where we can help with our integration capabilities to ensure and ease in various different sources. And last but not least, and it's a big hype all around the world right now in terms of generative AI, general AI and SAP strategy, there is you can build in AI into its processes. So thereby what we mean is you don't need to go to an external part where you have some kind of AI engine and then try to come back in your process. You can use AI directly into your software that you even sometimes don't notice that this is now AI that you have been able to use. So for example, in the BTP space, in the analytics space, we're now looking at natural language queries so that you really can use in some kind of like natural language asking, what is the revenue data for, like, what is the revenue for that particular year for this product, and also predicting it in the future. So, and thereby what's really interesting is that it would, for example, understand if you do a typo, right? If you do a typo in revenue, it would still understand that you meant revenue. It would also understand it if you write, ask it maybe in your home, like in your native language, right?
Yep.
These are things that we're where we're seeing already building AI into our technology, so it's easier for you to use. So just to recap, it's around data management, it's around real-time analytics, it's around data security and compliance, integration capabilities, and built-in AI.
Yeah. And maybe if I can just extend on that, as you mentioned in your question, there's a lot of data actually now being born outside of SAP, like IoT devices and so on and so forth. The true power of the business technology platform jointly with the SAP S/4HANA, the SAP Core ERP, is that we can put that data into business context. We not necessarily have to store all of that data in SAP databases, right? Vivian mentioned that IoT data safely can stay in a hyperscaler infrastructure in the cloud, right? But with BTP, we can actually derive insight from that data and link that to a business process. So we can derive insight like a machine is going to fail. We can then from there create the integration into the ERP where we say, okay, if the machine is going to fail, what is it that we're going to do about it? These are the maintenance activities that I now need to trigger. Okay, for that maintenance activity, I need the following spare parts. Do they actually sit in my supply chain, or do I still have to order them? Who are actually the resources that can execute that maintenance activity? With BTP, in context of the S4 system, we can actually provide that end-to-end value chain, right? Instead of just recognizing, okay, something is going to fail, I call somebody, right?
Yep.
That is the big difference of BTP with S4 that we can provide, right? And again, data can really sit anywhere. We still can leverage and use it in such integrated processes.
And one question I've got, and we were discussing this in our kind of pre-record chat, though, but I mean, many clients now are looking at, and they've got so many options available to them. So they are obviously looking at cloud providers, the hyperscalers, they're looking at the hyperscaler, some of the, you know, their AI and their ML tools as well. And I think you've kind of answered the question already, but, you know, what would you say to those customers, those organizations thinking, well, actually, and I know the hyperscalers are doing a good job at the moment saying, move your S4 estate onto our platform and then use our tools. What's SAP's position around that? What's your response?
Yeah, that really starts on the application side already. If you're going with a RISE with SAP approach versus like S4 with infrastructure as a service, I guess there are some key advantages if you go RISE with SAP. That is, RISE with SAP is not only like software the rest we leave like in the responsibility of the customer how to do it, right? With RISE with SAP, it's actually combining S/4HANA with BTP capabilities, with business process transformation capabilities based on the Signavio portfolio with managed services, right? And that truly help you understand and transform your business, which from my perspective supersedes what you can do with the infrastructure as a service approach. And I guess one of those managed services I want to, in the context of our discussion today, extremely highlight is that with RISE with SAP, we keep you on a relatively new release. If you're going RISE public cloud, you're always on the latest release. But even if you're going private cloud, right, we don't force you to upgrade regularly, but we, in a subtle way, push you to keep on. And that is like a true value that you get, right?
Yeah.
Now, again, if you combine that then with a technology platform, right, where we don't extract the data from S4 before we start adding value and creating value with that data, that is also adding value. Imagine you're doing like a financial reporting in a data warehouse. And for doing that, you need to first extract all the data out of your SAP. That means you have to rebuild the semantics of the data, you have to rebuild the authorizations, you have to rebuild business logic, currency translations, understanding of what a currency is in the first place, having hierarchies, having time dependencies. All of that costs you time and money, which you don't have to do if you keep that data inside of SAP. You build a semantic model across the SAP data and the non-SAP data, and through that combine a report running on SAP with like 10 additional fields that sit in a cloud hyperscaler data lake, right? And that is typically far easier to achieve than rebuilding everything from scratch.
And it goes back to very much the core of SAP back in the 70s and 80s, which was, why would you have multiple different applications? Why would you not have a unified application? And effectively what we're seeing is that unified data and application brought together with BTP, isn't it? And one point I would make, actually, Vivian, in terms of the AI and ML, anyone that was at Sapphire this year would have seen a really great demo on, I think it was an HR joining process using AI. And I'd point anyone at the SAP website. I think that demo is still available, and I've pointed a few people to them. So I do urge people to go and have a look at that. It's quite interesting. One thing,
I think, if you're generally interested around AI and what SAP is doing this topic, seriously, there's a very easy Google search you can do, is SAP and AI. Just put that in. You will get to the main website where we talk about all of the different AI use cases that are already out there.
Yep.
Which you can, when you, like, for example, are on S4 public cloud, you have already access to some parts of the AI that is built in. But on top of this, we released at Sapphire, one of them you just mentioned is the HR use case, but where we, for example, work with OpenAI together as one of the technology AI, like large language model providers that help us in this journey. But I guess generally to understand how we are approaching these different generative AI use cases that we announced at Sapphire is that, similar to the BTP, where we have a multi-cloud strategy where you can choose which kind of infrastructure hyperscaler you want to you leverage, we have also a multi-vendor strategy when it comes to AI. So we look at where across industries in our software does it make sense to apply AI, and then we evaluate, okay, based on that use case, which of the different AI providers out there are really like fitting and would help us provide the necessary like underlying technology for these parts. So that's where we partner with them. So we have a lot of strategic partnerships, and we just announced 3 additional ones in the space. So for example, Anthropic is an interesting one because they're really focusing on AI being secure and governed in a way.
Yep.
And that's quite shocking if you think about it, that there is a company out there that particularly focuses on that. So what are the other them doing? So for example, Anthropic has like an AI guideline, so where it kind of outlines basic rules of what an AI should not do. I mean, I'm not talking here, it's just like generally things that you should not insult somebody, you should not be, I don't know, suggest that people should be, get killed. You know, those kind of things are parts that an AI doesn't have that consciousness. But I think maybe, Garrett, it could be also interesting to talk about the different options of extensibility and what is out there.
Yes, let's go back to that, because I know... You mentioned maybe 10, 15 minutes ago about extensibility. So let's cover that and let's talk about, you know, extensibility. What does that mean and what are the options available?
Yeah, maybe I go first and you add on too. So we have like 3 type of extensibility options. We have in-app extensibility, we have developer extensibility, and we have side-by-side extensibility. So let's go a bit through what are these three different things we have, right? So in-app extensibility, and in-app extensibility directly sits in S4. So it's a more like low-code, no-code approach of adapting your application. So you need to imagine if you get S4, you can have some kind of like have some hidden fields, for example, which you can bring to forward or you can hide them. You have some kind of extension points where you can connect to. So these are kind of things which somebody who is not a professional developer can already use to kind of extend the application to some extent. It's in that sense not very like broad, but it still gives you already a first step towards extensibility. So that is the in-app extensibility. If we look further to the developer extensibility on S4, that is still part of S4, and it's some kind of environment for ABAP, so custom ABAP development that works, like sits on S4, and you can do some custom coding there, but you need to always call or like interact through public-facing APIs, for example, or other connection points in order to build your custom customizations. So you can't just build them as before, just you write them in. That would then literally not work. So thereby, it provides some kind of governed way for you how you can develop extensions. And the third one is side-by-side extensibility with SAP Business Technology Platform. These are kind of like loosely coupled applications or any kind of partner SaaS solutions. So thereby what we see is we have a huge variety of tools available of how we can build things. And thereby we're talking about our low-code, no-code portfolio. So you can build applications using low-code, no-code platform, which is SAP Build. You can build automations. You can use workflow capabilities. You can design business websites. This is all like the low-code space. If we look into the pro-code space, we're still, you know, in the side-by-side extensibility, right, for SAP Business Technology Platform. You have also an ABAP environment where you can build applications. But as we know, ABAP is a very like particular language and maybe also not the cheapest way to get some kind of developers to help you with these kind of extensibilities. That is why we also have a tool that's called SAP Business Application Studio, which is like a developer IDE tool for like professional developers where you can use JavaScript and so on. So you can also hire other developers that maybe know more of these kind of languages.
Yep.
And then we have also other cloud native tools. So to kind of sum it up, in-app extensibility on S4, developer extensibility on S4, and side-by-side extensibility with FAPPTP, where we have low-code and pro-code tools available.
So yeah, going very much from, you know, an end user being able and have access to be able to go and make some fundamental but really effective changes right the way up to kind of pro code developer type approaches. So a really comprehensive stack that is there. I just want to briefly touch on one point, and I'm conscious of time and how valuable your time is. You made a really good point about public cloud, and we've seen a lot of press recently around public cloud versus private cloud. It's pretty clear that SAP are developing new offerings, new functionality on public cloud. Private cloud is kind of not as available to some of those. Is this a good example then of how that divergence is beginning to take place, going back to our motorway analysis maybe?
The development strategy of SAP is basically reflecting the strategy, from my perspective, that we're seeing at our customers. And most of our customers are actually on a cloud strategy, and for very good reasons. There's good research that basically tells you just moving to the cloud without changing anything else, right? Already that has a very positive improvement of your EBIT, and you're basically saving money. But not only that, moving to cloud typically means faster innovations based on regular release cycles, but also based on driving more modularity into your business processes, right? A procure-to-pay is leveraging capabilities in source-to-contract from Ariba, but you do the operational buying in ERP. And that basically means you can innovate on the source to contract while the operational buying remains stable. So you have that like agility that you get from that, right?
Yeah.
And basically, we are reflecting that in our product development and in our innovation strategy. That basically innovations we bring to market with a cloud first approach, right? That doesn't mean we develop everything in public cloud only, right? We are innovating in public cloud and in private cloud. But as a matter of fact, right, public cloud innovations come on a quarterly cycle because customers can basically consume on a quarterly cycle, while innovations in private cloud only come on an annual cycle, right? Because typically customers can consume only at a lower pace, right? And that basically is probably the reason why you're seeing like some innovations being first on public cloud, then coming to private cloud at a later point.
Thank you. I'm conscious of your time and you've been very generous with me, so thank you. One last question, really. And I think if you were speaking to any customer at the moment, any organization, you know, what are the core principles? What are the takeaways that you would give them as a starting point in terms of where we started this, getting a clean call with S/4HANA? What would you kind of advise them as a starting point?
So if they're already thinking now about things and have not really started yet, I would advise them to think about how they're getting to some kind of clean core, right? How do they do the extensibility? What are things that they would like to pursue further? What is their strategy that they want to put in place? And what are they doing with their data? So extensibility in terms of like how to get to how to deal with the customizations in their core and how many do they have to get an understanding of it. But then also, what about the data part? So these two things are things that you really easily can do when you are on your S/4 journey by even not having set in stone when you will be transforming to like moving on to S/4. These are things that you can do upfront. And there will be mentioned, right, the clean core analysis, trying to get an understanding of what are these customizations, how many would you take with you, how many would you maybe slightly change, and how many can you archive because you don't need them anymore. So if you have these kind of thoughts, speak to your BTP expert in your from like who is assigned to your company, and they can easily help you further with these like data and extensibility topics.
Yeah, and from my perspective, as early as possible, start defining your 3R strategy, retire, refactor, rebuild. Then Vivian talked about the three core extensibility options that we have with S/4. That is the key user extensibility, the developer extensibility, and the side-by-side extensibility. As part of that 3R strategy, you should actually define your criteria when to use which extensibility option. And as Vivian was saying earlier, we support you with that. We have extensibility guides that show decision trees as to when to use what and so on and so forth. And thirdly, I guess my third recommendation, and that is pretty much in line also with what Vivian just said, start early, right? This journey is going to take some time, right? The sooner you start, the better. And as part of that, get your hands dirty. Get your hands dirty with the technology. Try out things. Go to SAP Discovery Center. Try out the missions that you find there, right? Try out the missions that basically are like hands-on tutorials how to use the BTP side-by-side extensibility. These things take maybe 30 minutes on a Friday afternoon and get you like first idea how like creating extensions and innovations will change, right? From the classic extensibility that we did in the past with coding ABAP directly in S/4 to modeling extensions with the SAP built in the business technology platform, right? And that's the best way really to experience to go to SAP Discovery Center and basically look at what those missions are and experience them.
Yeah. Well, so, Garen, this is one of the hottest tips we can give. You know, there are some underrated websites at SAP, and one of them is the SAP Discovery Center. So we will provide you the link. And
please do.
There where you can see basically all the services that are available on the BTP and who has been using them. How much does it cost? What does it do? And also, like, how can you get started and use it even actively? Because there are a lot of things on a free tier, then you will see the tick with that, where you can even try things out for free, right? And the second most underrated website is the SAP BTP Accelerator Hub, where you can find all APIs and, you know, connectors and all of these kind of things. So the two most underrated websites, definitely check them out.
I will do, and they will be in the show notes. And I think on that point is really important because customers do sometimes don't appreciate that these are already use cases that other customers are using, and they're actually live. They're not just theoretical. And if I can finish on an analogy, because I think we've worked analogies really hard on this podcast, I would ask, you know, my customers when I'm talking to them, I'd make the analogy of moving to S/4HANA like moving house. And I've said this many times on this podcast, which is, you know, when you move house, it's not the day the removal van turns up. It's that, you know, you're thinking about it a couple of years beforehand. Maybe you're thinking about where you're going to live. You're going to think about the type of house you want and the location. And those are the sorts of things that you can be doing well ahead of your S/4 journey. So all the things you've heard today, I would urge you to take on board, because they're some fantastic advice. Vivian, Gerd, conscious of time, you've been really generous. Thank you so much for your time. It's been great chatting to you. Some great, insightful advice there. And I look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thank you, Garen. Bye.
Thanks.